Safety National Casualty Corporation, Lugar, and Spate. Did I get that right?
Spate, Your Honor.
Spate, I'm sorry.
That's okay, it happens all the time.
Those vowels always get me.
That's right.
Ms. Lugar, do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes.
Okay, you may begin. Could you maybe speak up a little bit into the microphone so we can hear you a little better? Thank you.
May it please the court and counsel, I represent Tracy Irby, the claimant, and I know that the Court of Appeals of Virginia promulgated a question of whether or not they actually had the authority to hear this appeal, so I wanted to address that first. And the claimant's contention is that they do, that this was a final order, and it, by just merely a motion to vacate, does not eviscerate the final order and the appealability of that final order. All the cases that have been relied on both by claimant's counsel and defendant's counsel in this case were all about refusal to vacate awards or, vacating of awards, and one of which was vacated and it was appealed, and the Court of Appeals found that they had authority on that case as well as the other ones. We would argue that if the court were to find that they did not have authority in this case, it would frankly be an argument of due process. So if the defendant's counsel says...
You have what is essentially a dispositive motion, that I have a valid final order and you can't go back. It's kind of the reverse of accord and satisfaction. You haven't paid me, but I have a document saying that you owe me a debt. But all the time, potentially dispositive arguments are deemed interlocutory in nature because they've ruled against you on that. They've ruled that it's not a final order. They've sent it to the hearing docket. They may be wrong about that. But in the nature of superintending the award, which is the commission's job, people go back to have their order enforced by the commission all the time. Why isn't that a question that you can raise at the end of the day at whatever happens in this proceeding? I understand that's longer. It denies you, there's real injury to that. It denies benefits. But why is it not?
It's the same as if that were the case, then the only time that an order would be appealable and be in front of the Court of Appeals is if we had a petition in order, because the nature of workers' comp is there's final orders all the time that promulgate substantive material about the case. And if it's just by merely someone making a motion to vacate that is entertained,
But if there's a disputed further benefit and somebody says that this issue has been determined in the prior order, it's res judicata, and the commission disagrees that it's res judicata, and therefore you have to go through a full evidentiary hearing, whether before a deputy commissioner, before the commission, what have you, we can still reach on appeal whether they erred in finding it was res judicata or not, but it's not an immediately appealable ruling, even though it's dispositive. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do, but
how is this different?
It's different because it's disposing of complete aspects of the case. The final order, once the open medical award is awarded to the claimant, once the TTD award is awarded to the claimant, those things are foreclosed except for they get a new job or they're not marketing themselves. And only then is it's a prospective termination of the award. It's not a retrospective application. So this issue is foreclosed. So if you're talking about, say they were unsuccessful in vacating the award, they could appeal. So this is where the due process argument comes into place. When it is vacated, we're not allowed to appeal as a claimant or the other party.
You get to appeal, you just don't get to appeal now because at least in theory, and I assume it was taken off the hearing docket once you noted your appeal, they sent it to a hearing docket on June 26th. In theory, it is theoretically possible that the claimant would do better at the end of the hearing than they do by the proposed settlement. I'm not saying it's likely.
It's not. That theory is incorrect. An open medical and a full TTD award is the best you can do on that under these circumstances.
Well, right, but you prove a higher average weekly wage or something.
No.
That could happen at the hearing.
But the point is, ultimately, you could win. You could you could get an award, if not more, certainly the same as you received previously. And the question we have is, why should we take our time to decide the case if we don't know whether you're an aggrieved party or not?
Because this was a final order. Now we have to go through all the hoops and loops and jumps and hurdles to prove our case, which was already proven. Because final orders are looked at as if it's been fully adjudicated before your commission.
But if the question seems to be, does the commission have the authority to reopen or to vacate the award? If they have the power or the authority to vacate the award, then we ought to wait until the final resolution before we decide whether they exercise that power appropriately or not.
Well, I mean, Collins, which we're all familiar, I'm sure, with Collins based on the briefing, talks the award was vacated and it was appealed. And it wasn't, there wasn't evidence that there was an evidentiary hearing. They literally just retrospectively applied this and then they appealed it. And also, what we're talking about is the case of Gobbler v. Clinch Valley Lumber Company, it's not in my brief, it's 141 VA 303, it's a 1925 case, and at 305 it states that, you know, the Workers' Comp Commission is set up for the claimant. It's supposed to be highly remedial for the claimant. This is not a highly remedial aspect for the claimant, that they have to go through all these rigors that they're already proven. And I'll tell you the case that illustrates, it's Conagay, and multiple cases rely on that a final order is viewed as if the case has been fully adjudicated before the commission, as if all the evidentiary hearing has occurred, period.
Will your case be stronger if the record reflected that the employer had sent the agreement that only had one signature?
It was their requirement to send the agreement, Your Honor. Rule 4.1 requires it.
I'm asking, but that's not the question I asked. My question is very specific. If the record reveals, you say it, your brief says it's unclear how it got there.
It is.
Would your argument be stronger if the record reflected that the employer had actually sent it?
Of course, our argument would be greatly strong. I mean, I would be happy if we had some kind of evidence that illustrated that we do have evidence on page 54 of the appendix illustrating that they received the award order, and then 5 days later is when they signed the agreement form. And Rule 4.1 requires when both parties have signed it, the last party, i.e. the insurance company, are the ones that are supposed to upload it.
Well, let me kind of transition a little bit, maybe, mm-hmm. then towards the merits. Is it your position that the commission does not have the authority to vacate an award if the commission makes a mistake?
I don't see any published authority that allows them to do that, Your Honor. There are remedies available in the Act, which means you can move to set aside an award within the 30 days, and likewise...
So if the commission picked up the wrong file and signed and made an award that in a case they never intended to make an award in, are you saying that after 30 days the commission could not vacate that and correct that mistake?
No, I don't think they can. It's the obligation of the parties to, and you can vacate award as a party for any win during that 30 days.
The commission has the power to do full and complete justice in each case.
I know.
Is it full and complete justice to grant an award based on the commission's mistake?
I love how we keep taking this full and complete justice out of context. Every time it's been discussed in the cases, starting from Harris v. Diamond Construction in 1924, was in the context of whether or not the commission could open to consider fraud, mutual mistake, and imposition. And ever since then, it is only looked at in the context of imposition. So no, they have the authority to review and vacate an award based on premise solely on fraud, mutual mistake, and imposition.
Well, Harris says it is immaterial whether the mistake of fact is mutual or unilateral. And then Harris goes on to say that...
Where in Harris does that say, is that said, Your Honor?
That's at 721.
Because I have at...
This is 184 Virginia 711, Harris B. Diamond Construction.
Mm-hmm. The discussion there was whether or not... I don't know where that is, Your Honor. I've got page at 577 at multiple
this
paragraphs.
This is Virginia reports.
Yeah, I mean, I've got the fast case and the internal print sites are probably a bit different. But my reading of Harris is they talk about in one paragraph. It says, you know, General Assembly has established this industrial commission arising out of industrial accidents. It is intended the tribunal should have jurisdiction to do full and final justice in each case, period, right? It granted to the commission the power and authority not only to make and enforce awards, but to protect itself and its awards from fraud, imposition, and mistake. So that's all within the same paragraph. It's all reflecting on their, and Harris is considering whether or not they have the authority to open and consider and vacate judgments.
In discussing imposition in Miller versus Potomac Hospital, we said that the advantage in that case that somebody was saying the doctrine of imposition is set aside was not gained by by use of superior knowledge or by any economic leverage or by experience with the act. To the extent that something inappropriate had happened, it was done because the fund, who was essentially in the shoes of the employer in that case, failed to timely appeal a deputy commissioner's opinion, and therefore imposition would not lie. Does that sound familiar to this case?
Yes, I would agree. It sounds exactly familiar. I mean, they had 30 days. They had receipt of the award order. Look at the appendix. Page 54 illustrates that it's a date stamp that they received it. 5 days later, they endorsed the agreement order. There was a meeting of the minds on that. There was no mutual mistake.
Well, I mean, but the whole point is, even if the commission picked up the wrong file and sent the award order to them, they had it. They had 30 days. The employer had 30 days to act. They didn't. They waited 4 months to act. And in fact, they didn't act at all. They waited until somebody said, we've been sitting on this award order for 4 months and we haven't gotten paid.
Right. Okay. I'll leave my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Johnny Spate representing LifePoint Health, the prevailing party in the commission below. Two issues today. One is the subject matter jurisdiction of this court to hear this appeal of the commission's interlocutory decree that did not adjudicate the principles of the cause. And then the second issue is, did the full commission correctly set aside that February 24, 2018 award order that was signed by only one party?
Well, going to the first question, is it LifePoint's position that there hasn't been a final order in this case of any kind, and therefore the claimant, assume you go through a hearing process and LifePoint wins, and no compensable accident is found, no benefits are to be paid, claimant still has every right, and it would be the first time that this court be empowered to address whether the commission had the ability to essentially withdraw what was an order that was more than 30 days old and was never appealed.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that the claimant would be able to appeal it at that time.
Brief, you said that the February 25th order is void ab initio. You never argued that below, did you? You argued that the commission should set it aside. You never argued that they didn't have the power to enter it in the first place.
Well, I think impliedly, we may not have used the words void ab initio. I'd have to go back and look at what the motion said. But impliedly that they didn't have authority to enter.
Why is it void as opposed to merely voidable? They make mistakes all the time.
And that's a good question. Yeah, I mean, I think the proper analysis is that we have the General Assembly enacted 65.2701. This is how Awards are entered based on a commission form signed by both parties. We have the form, says in bold, all caps, signatures, plural required, only the claimant signed, and the commission mistakenly entered an award order. But
mistakenly is different because they have subject matter jurisdiction, and they have jurisdiction over the parties here because both parties are already in front of them. The order may be erroneous, but what about it is beyond the commission's normal power. They may have done it mistakenly. They maybe shouldn't have entered the order, but the subject matter, the parties, all are properly in front of them, isn't it?
Well, to the extent the claimant had evidenced her agreement to entry of the award at the time the commission entered the February 2018 award.
Well, going back to Miller versus Potomac Hospital, and that was a case in which an argument was made that the deputy commissioner entered an award order. It was not appealed to, no timely statement on review was filed. And then subsequently, the employer argues, wait a minute, the deputy commissioner didn't have the authority, that was beyond the deputy commissioner's statutory authority to rule as it did. And what we said was, the commission's ruling that the deputy commissioner's order exceeded the commission's authority was not an issue that the commission could consider as a collateral attack. This matter had to be raised on direct appeal from the deputy commissioner's June 2006 opinion. Logically, why doesn't that apply here if we get to the merits?
Logically, say that again. I'm sorry. I'm having a hard time hearing.
Assuming we get to the merits, that we don't find that we do find that the merits issue is in front of us, why doesn't that resolve the merits issue?
And in favor of the claimant?
Yes. The argument is that something exceeded the commission's authority, and what we said was if you didn't bring it within the 30-day period, if you didn't challenge the order within the 30-day period, it's done.
Well, Your Honor, may I answer that with that question with a hypothetical? If instead of an award agreement signed only by the claimant that served as a basis for this award order, you had before you a termination of wage loss agreement form, which I'm sure y'all are familiar with, signed only by the carrier, that formed the basis for the commission to enter a termination of wage loss award.
And the commission enters it without the signature.
Well,
and the order goes to the claimant, and the claimant takes no action for 30 days. If all of that happens, then yes, it's the same circumstance. And the question is the failure to act when you get what you contend is an erroneous order that says it's final and will be final if you take no further action, where does that leave you? Do you lose because you didn't act? That's the question.
And no, Your Honor, I don't think so. And I think the case law, especially from the commission, I'll point you to page 4 of our appellee's brief, as far back as 1995 in the Martin versus Fauquier Democrat commission decision, the commission in that case entered an award that was not executed by the carrier, and 4 years later it was challenged and set aside.
What's the limiting principle, though? If the commission can go back and open up any order after the 30 days has run, and, of course, it wouldn't matter whether it was 31 days or 6 years, what would prevent you from revisiting an employer from revisiting any award at any time?
Well, if it's a commission mistake, and that's what we have here, we have this mistake. The mistake occurred at the commission by entry of an award based on an agreement form that was signed by only one party. So if it's a commission mistake, I think, you know, the remedy would depend on the circumstances of that particular case.
Well, isn't the answer to Judge Russell's question that the commission has to find the motion to vacate has to be seasonably made, I think is the term the commission has used. And of course, that would be a case by case determination. But
I agree.
There's going to be a point where it's not seasonable, and then is not subject to being reopened.
I think that's true, and I believe in this case it was seasonable. Even though it was outside the 30 days statutory appeal period, again, I go back to this.
What would the 30 days bar, or is that just some kind of an advisory guideline? I mean, if you can go after 30 days, then what does the 30-day period bar? I mean, you have 30 days to protest something. You have 30 days to object. You have 30 days to appeal. If you're allowed to do things outside the 30 days, in some instances, I'm trying to figure out what do you lose in the 30 days if you don't move in 30 days, or is everything subject to being reopened?
Well, I think it's pretty much the 30 days typically applies, but it depends on in the circumstances of this case where the commission made a mistake by entering an award that bore the signature of only one party.
But every case that comes to us, somebody has told us the commission has made a mistake.
Well, yes, Your Honor, I understand that, but this is almost a ministerial, administrative mistake.
Would the 30-day limit apply for motions requesting the commission to reconsider its decision or reweigh the facts or something inherent in the decision rather than calling upon the commission to exercise its equitable powers?
To correct its own mistake, yes. I completely agree. I mean, I think in most cases the 30-day rule clearly is going to apply. Now, but if you have fraud, misrepresentation, and those indicia of...
The commission found no fraud.
No, that's absolutely
right.
They
found no misrepresentation. They found no ill conduct on the part of either party.
That's correct. And mistake of the commission falls within, is one of the indicia that permits a post 30-day review of a mistake made by the commission. And, I mean, that's long been the way the commission has interpreted its authority, and this court has long, and the Supreme Court of Virginia has long agreed with that. As far as where the cutoff is, hypothetically, if there was a fraud on the commission, and there have been cases like that, that the fraud's not discovered despite the exercise of due diligence until much later, I think if that's brought to the commission's decision on an application for hearing, for example, by the employer, it can set aside that award. It can set aside the initial award. If there's fraud. And in fact, I've had them do that in another case where I had evidence of fraud.
I don't dispute that fraud changes the rules, but without a finding of fraud here.
And there is no fraud. And there was no exercise by the employer of any superior knowledge. A mistake by the commission. The commission clearly has the authority to correct its own mistakes after the 30-day period. I mean, if that were not the case,
I guess I'm sticking with, we don't have the ability to correct the commission's mistakes after 30 days if no notice of appeal is filed. We don't.
Well, no, you are an appellate court,
right?
Yes, they're a fact finder, quasi-appellate fact finder, right? Everything's de novo in that court.
While they have jurisdiction to act, yes.
Yes, and again, I go back to, I mean,
if they find that they made a factual finding mistake, res judicata still applies in a subsequent commission proceeding, right? They can't go back and re-find facts that they've already found unless there's fraud.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, then there's been a full-blown factual evidentiary hearing, and you've got a record. Here, there was no evidence, and the commission's full commission's opinion pointed this out. No evidence was adduced upon which a commission could conclude or infer that at the time it entered its February 2018 award order based on an agreement form signed by only one person, that the employer and carrier agreed to entry of it. I mean,
although the employer and carrier clearly did agree, it just wasn't the basis of the order.
Well, I don't know that.
I mean, they signed afterwards.
Well, they signed, but I don't think that can retroactively go back.
I understand it can't go back to the order, but there was an agreement at some point.
Well, that's correct.
Why did they eventually sign the order before?
There's no evidence in the record about that, and I think the go ahead.
Is the logical conclusion that the reason they signed it was that they agreed to it?
I don't think the court has any evidence before it to infer or reach a conclusion. I think the March 2018 signature of the claim administrator representative of the award order, I just think that's not relevant. It was not before the commission when it entered its February 2018 award order.
All that seems to be an argument to let the commission reach final conclusion before we review whether they erred or not.
Yes, Your Honor. I completely agree. Now, if y'all do y'all have any questions? Any more questions, I should say?
I would have thought that we had given enough.
I think you have. Yes, I appreciate that. And again, I mean, I do commend to y'all to think about if it would, the flip side of this coin, benefits terminated based by the commission based on an agreement form signed only by the employer. I would never get up here and argue to any panel of this court that the claimant could not come back more than 30 days after entry of that and challenge that termination of their benefits based on a document that they never signed. So, I think good for the goose, good for the gander. I do respectfully request that y'all dismiss the appeal for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, and if you assume jurisdiction, then we request that you please affirm the full commission.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Ms. Luger, I'm going to put a few extra minutes back on your clock because I owe you an apology. The site I read you is not out of Harris. It is out of one of our cases, Collins versus Department of Alcoholic Beverage Control, explaining Harris. So I apologize for not following the IDs to their logical conclusion.
Thank you. It sounded like Collins to me. And Collins is a case that is it will put you through a whirlwind, but in essence, it's dicta in terms of what they say with respect to full and complete justice. And likewise, it, again, still puts it in the context of Harris, and Harris is literally thinking about it in the essence of whether or not the commission actually has jurisdiction to review this, and concludes that it does as long as there's mutual mistake, a finding of fraud, or imposition. In terms of responding to this idea, if there was a termination of wage loss put forward to a commission, the commission ordered it, again, I would argue we, as the claimants' counsel, would have a remedy by moving to vacate that through the workers' comp policies and procedures, or appeal it in a timely fashion. But if I appealed it in a timely fashion, I think I would need to be arguing that it was fraud on the commission, that there was no evidence of an agreement or a meeting of the minds. We have lots of evidence in this case, Your Honors, that there was a meeting of the minds. The commission in appendix page 9 sends out what's called a 20-day order to defense counsel saying, listen, you guys going to accept this claim or are you not? And they respond, appendix page 12, it's called their order response form, saying, we are going to be in agreement. We're sending out an agreement form on this, right?
But isn't it up to the commission first to decide whether there was a meeting of the minds? I mean, that's what I come back to whether this is an appealable order. There are things the commission has still got to resolve here and may very well resolve them in your favor,
I think the commission has already made that resolution. They said there was a mistake and basically put it back on the hearing
document. Entering the order, but not a mistake on whether there was a meeting of the minds.
They put it back on the hearing docket. So they've eviscerated all the rights that we had through a final order. And this is a final order. I mean, the Hartford Fire Insurance v. Tucker, which incorporates Cornegay, which is one of my cases I referenced, that this is a final order. The only way to vacate this type of order is clear and convincing evidence of grounds of fraud, mutual mistake, or imposition.
The motion to vacate isn't what put it back before the commission, though, is it? The motion to vacate came in response to a motion to enforce.
Correct.
Which clearly would be filed with the commission, and we can't deal with however they deal with a motion to enforce until it's resolved. It hasn't been, and the question for us is, has the motion to enforce been fully resolved? We know what the outcome is going to be. They're putting you through the process of actually proving the claim up. And so you've lost your motion to enforce, and there's no question about that. But the question is the commission proceeding finished? Your argument is it should never have started.
Your Honor.
Is the current proceeding finished?
Yes. And so I think it's a very
doesn't think so because it put something on the hearing docket to do.
Workers' comp is a very kind of weird animal of its
own,
never right?
Ends.
But exactly, it doesn't. And there's different stages of the procedures. And if we could not find that there were final orders of these different stages, what the commission has done is say, we're wiping clean this final order that has established rights for a claimant. We're getting rid of them. Goodbye. You don't have those rights anymore. And we're going to retry it. That's not even in the spirit of the act for claimants.
Do you agree that the commission does have the implied power to, quote, entertain and hear an application seasonably presented to vacate and set aside an award procured through fraud or mistake?
Fraud or mutual mistake. So,
well, the case says fraud or mistake.
Well, they loved it.
And then the debate becomes, does that have to be mutual or not?
It's always been mutual.
But it's all the mutual mistake cases always involve mistakes by the parties, not mistake by the commission.
Your Honor, I see that my time is...
I said we'd give you a little extra time because I misled you a little bit.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have yet to see a published opinion that illustrates that it can be a unilateral mistake, period. And a mistake by the commission is appealable through the workers' comp policies and procedures or to appeal it. That's what you guys are here for. I respectfully ask that you show that the workers' comp full commission erred when vacating and setting aside the when they set aside the award order.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll greet counsel, then we'll take up Jones versus Commonwealth.